flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Kith. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Well, a little bit of breaking news here. We're following the nomination process for Pete Hegseth, and it looks as if one senator on the Republican side is defecting. Any guesses as to who that might be? It's one that you'd expect. It's Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who said she is the first to oppose Pete Hegseth for defense secretary. So we'll see how this shakes out. It was reported about 3 hours ago from the New York Times that they were doing a mock vote. So I guess this is what they do before they go public with it to make sure that people aren't going to defect. And then if they do defect, then they won't have the real vote. And it looks like Lisa Murkowski said she's a no. If she's the only one saying no, he is going to pass with flying colors. All the Democrats, other than we talked about in the studio off air here, that maybe John Fetterman would cross over and vote for him, which would end up being 53 votes for Hegseth.
That would be just delicious irony.
it would be at that point, you're like, dude.
The person who's more conservative than the Alaskan senators, the Democrat who had a stroke.
At this point, Fetterman, why don't you just cross over? You can be a moderate Republican. You're right now a very moderate Democrat, and unfortunately, he still does vote with Democrats a lot. But it'd be awesome if he started crossing the aisle quite a bit now. After he saw the writing on the wall that his other Democrat counterpart did not win re-election in Pennsylvania, that's probably part of this. Anyway, this is the Annie Fry Show. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry. Brad Range is here, and so is Ethan. You'll hear them throughout the show. We're going to connect with Hogan Gidley, American First Policy Institute Senior Advisor for Communications, coming up next about the first 4 days of the Trump administration and find out what we're seeing boots on the ground wise, you know, what's the actual results of some of these executive orders and things like that. But before we do, we were in the first segment walking through Trump's interview with Sean Hannity. And as I set it up, if Trump does an interview with Kristen Welker or some sort of mainstream outlet, he is going out to talk to the opposition, which doesn't always include the audience wise, you know, you might have kind of a cross section of people watching who aren't just Democrats. I mean, if you go on MSNBC or something, you're talking to Democrats. But if you do a mainstream outlet, you talk to Good Morning America or whatever, you're talking to probably a left leaning audience, but some Republicans too, or people who are apolitical. When you talk to Sean Hannity, you're going to get a friendly interview. And the point of that interview is to basically just get your agenda out there for people to see what you're doing. That's what he was doing. There's nothing wrong with that. Trump talks to enough unfriendly media that you know that he's not just hiding somewhere like the Harris-Biden administration was doing
they
throughout.
They didn't even talk to friendly media.
I saw in 2024, kid you not, a stat that said how many... They had the number of press conferences that Biden did in each year in office. Mm-hmm. And 2024 was actually one of the lowest, which makes sense if you're getting worse. That makes sense. But it also, they put up the time spent in a press conference. It was barely over 2 hours in the entire year of 2024 in the midst of running for president. And that's when you should be out there the most.
Trump spent 90 minutes on his first day in office, in the Oval Office, answering questions while signing executive orders.
Oh, he's easily eclipsed the entire year from Joe Biden in probably the first 2 days. He's way past it now on day four. And that was before he ever talked to Hannity.
Out of January, he will have eclipsed Biden's entire presidency.
I mean, unbelievable. And there are people in the media, the left mainstream media, who acknowledge somewhat privately, yeah, it's nice to have that back. We don't love Donald Trump, but man, the dude's pretty transparent. They will say these things.
Oh, yeah. I like watching the press conferences because you can actually hear that relief on the White House press corps. You can hear it in their voices and when they ask questions, like, oh, we're going to get an answer. We may not like the answer, but we're going to get an answer. It's not going to be word salad.
They ask some stupid questions. They still do. That's okay, because when you have a president that can handle it and honestly put them back in their place, I don't know if you saw some of the earlier ones from this week before we get into Hannity here, but there was a reporter asking him, I think it was about January 6th. Man, January 6th is like all the mainstream media wants to talk about right now. And they asked him something about his pardons, and he started to answer, and then the interviewer or the journalist interrupted him, mm-hmm. and he said, stop it. Stop interrupting me. I'm answering your question.
Yeah.
And he goes, have some respect. And the guy goes, I apologize. So that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
But that's also, to an extent, what they have to do, especially when they're a room full of other people trying to get questions also. That's what you do. But anyway, this is Sean Hannity. This is him sort of just getting his agenda out there. If you missed the first hour and the first segment, he talked about coming into office and what it would have been like if he had stayed in versus coming back for a second term after having Biden. You know, that was kind of interesting. He talked about the spending bills that they're working on right now. Nothing really specific, but just that they're working on them. He talked about FEMA being something that's much better done statewide than federal.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's still federal money. He didn't really specify, but he said the closer these disaster reliefs are to the people they're relieving, the better, which I have a hard time arguing with. And then he said people are learning right now that Democrats can't govern. And I think we've seen that in action every single turn. Democrats for 4 years were mismanaging the government, and you wondered sometimes if they were doing it on purpose. We know they probably were on the border. So that leads us up to where we are in the middle of this interview. Now, this is Trump talking to Sean Hannity about the pardons, but more so about Biden's pardons.
He heard that I was going to do it. I didn't want to do it. I was given the option. They said, sir, would you like to pardon everybody, including yourself? Mm. I said, I'm not going to pardon anybody. We didn't do anything wrong. And we had people that suffered. They're incredible patriots. We had people that suffered. Mm. You had Bannon put in jail. You had Peter Navarro put in jail. You had people that suffered. And far worse than that, they've lost their fortunes. They've lost their whatever, their nest egg, paying it to lawyers. And those people, and people said, you want, and they wouldn't have even taken, most of those people, they wouldn't have even taken a pardon. This guy went around giving everybody pardons. And you know, the funny thing, maybe the sad thing, is he didn't give himself a pardon.
When we were covering the inauguration on Monday, it shocked us all because we saw the news, when you mm-hmm. saw the news, that Biden had pardoned his family for any crimes committed in the last 10 or 11 years. That's a long range. And the way that it's been interpreted because that pardon specifically didn't include Hunter Biden, but it was basically a mirror of the Hunter Biden pardon, which got all the attention for the rest of his family, that these people, including Hunter, could have murdered people during that 10 years, and it's all pardoned.
All gone.
It's all gone. They could have literally done anything, and they will not be able to prosecute them for anything.
Man, you stop and think about the implications of what that says. And we had Will Chamberlain on from the Article 3 Project yesterday, and he said that it was a tacit admission of guilt, which, okay, cool. It might be an admission that they did things wrong, that they broke the law, that Jim Biden, Hunter Biden, everybody, that they broke the law, that they were doing things wrong. They were running around the world picking up sacks of cash for Joe Biden for his business, which was influence selling, apparently. Or it's also a tacit admission of guilt that, hey, I know I wrongly went after Donald Trump in my presidency, and I'm trying to protect myself from him doing the same thing to me. People don't operate out of their own sphere of understanding. When they're in something, that's what they make all their decisions. That's how they see the world and everything. So Joe Biden thought to himself, this is how I would treat people. So this is how other people would probably treat me.
I don't know about you, but whenever I see somebody, an admission of guilt to me is whenever I see somebody running down the street and they're holding bags with dollar signs on them and they have cash
flying out,
stuffed into their shirt, just kind of flying out, and they have the raccoon eyes and they have the black and white striped shirt. To me, and they're wearing a beanie, that looks guilty. Now, I haven't seen them commit the crime.
Yeah.
But it looks guilty.
It looks guilty.
And maybe sometimes they're stealing hamburgers, you know? Like, it doesn't matter what they're stealing, but they look like they're stealing. This looks like that.
Yeah.
This looks like when you pardon your entire family for unspecified crimes for the last decade, all of them, you go, that looks like a crime. It looks like probably a crime there. Yeah. But he didn't. He's right. Yeah. Trump said in this he did not pardon himself. And so,
well,
we didn't breach that legal question, which is always a question. Yeah. Can you pardon yourself if you're president?
There's an old saying that goes, the guilty flee when there is no pursuit.
So the next clip from the Hannity interview is again about pardons, but this is about Trump's.
A number of reasons. Number one, they were in there for 3.5 years, a long time.
Right.
And in many solitary confinement. Treated like nobody's ever been treated so badly. They were treated like the worst criminals in history. And you know what they were there for? They were protesting the vote because they knew the election was rigged and they were protesting the vote. And that you should be allowed to protest a vote. You should be allowed to. You know, when the day comes.
You shouldn't be able to invade the Capitol.
No, ready? Most of the people were absolutely innocent. Okay, but forgetting all about that, these people have served horribly a long time. It would be very, very cumbersome to go and look. You know how many people we're talking about? 1,500 people. Almost all of them should not have happened. And the other thing is this, some of those people with the police, true, but they were very minor incidents, okay? You know, they get built up by that couple of fake guys that are on CNN all the time.
Nobody watches.
They were very minor incidents.
You know how many of those J6ers were charged with insurrection?
Oh, I don't think any of them were charged with insurrection.
Yeah, it was zero. They tried.
Yeah. What is the phrase they like to use, though? It's something else. And there was like six of the 1,500, was like six people were charged with the phrase. I can't remember what it is. But like I've heard horror stories. Like I believe in the United States that you have several rights, one of which is the right to a speedy trial and a jury amongst your peers. And some of these stories that I have heard where people were arrested, put in jail, and never got a trial over that entire presidency, that is not a speedy trial.
No, that's political prisoner. One of those I've mentioned before, I had on my show on the weekend, Jake Lang, a couple times. It was always tough to talk to him, though, because he had to use phone cards from prison, and you had to schedule a time to talk to him in prison. And that's not easy to do. You know, they don't just like, well, let me look at my QuickBook here and make sure that everything's in order. They you know, you get it when you can get it. And so I would try to schedule interviews with him and did a couple times. The guy to this date, and I just saw a picture of him. Actually, he's out, which is awesome. He was having a steak dinner and he posted, I'm having a dinner with my wife. I think fiance at the time. I think they got married while he was in prison. And he was thrilled.
Well,
Never got a trial.
My thing is this, because when you listen to the left on this whole situation, they were like, we have the goods on all of these people. Great. Give the goods. Run to court. Get the trial and then put them in jail. Get your conviction if you've got the goods. To sit there and to not try somebody makes me angry. And I don't care if that person actually did it. If you've got the evidence, if you've got the goods, convict them and put them in jail. But you didn't do that. You threw them in prison. And I think, I suspect it's because you didn't actually have the goods. And this was an effort, in my opinion, to stifle free speech. They wanted to make an example of these people so nobody would ever raise up and question an election again. The fact that people, do you remember this? You cannot question the results of a certified election. That is the most un-American thing I have ever heard. You absolutely can question everything in this country. And there's a bunch of you on the left right now out there questioning a lot of things now that your guy isn't in office. And you know what? That's your right. Talk your stuff. Do you. But remember that whenever you're back in power, you don't get to stifle other people's free speech.
Absolutely. The last one I'll play here before we get to Hogan Gidley on the other side of this break is Trump talking about his own lawfare that he had to go through for 4 years.
I went through 4 years of hell by this scum that we had to deal with. I went through 4 years of hell. I spent millions of dollars in legal fees, and I won. But I did it the hard way. It's really hard to say that they shouldn't have to go through it also. It is very hard to say that.
He's very right here. If I were in his shoes, I would be so mad. Now, I mean, things have changed now. But having had to have gone through that, and nobody's really pulling for you. I mean, the American people ultimately pulled for you, which is what matters the most. But there's nobody he could really turn to say, look, isn't this unjust? Somebody fix this. He was the guy. He had to turn to himself, in a sense, and say, well, then fine, I guess I'll become the president and rectify these wrongs. What they did to him is so gross, and what they did to all of the J6ers, especially, and let me clarify, especially the ones, like Brad was saying, who never got a trial. They didn't get tried for a crime, and they were put in prison for 3 to 4 years for nothing. Now, maybe they did commit a crime, but we don't know. That's why you have due
process.
They
never brought it.
They never brought it. And so I get the anger and him saying, these scum, that's true. Those people are scoundrels.
Yes.
And they need to be put in their place because that is unjust, and America is a just place.
You know, the other side of that thing is, too, he's talking there about, quote unquote, getting revenge. You don't, like, everybody was worried, is Trump going to take his revenge? He doesn't need to take revenge if he wasn't unjustly treated. It was an omission from everybody talking and worried about him taking revenge. They were admitting that they knew what happened to Donald Trump was wrong, and they wronged him.
They ran on putting him in prison. That's the opposite of justice. That's not blindfold over the scales of justice, lady standing there. That's, I'm going to not just peek out from behind this blindfold, I am going to laser focus on a person and figure out how to put them in prison because I don't like them. That's despicable and disgusting, and it's one of the reasons I'm very, very glad that Donald Trump won. We got Hogan Gidley coming up to talk about the first few days of this Donald Trump term, what all has been accomplished, what is still being accomplished, and what is it going to look like in America over the next couple weeks? He's from the America First Policy Institute. He is on the Annie Fry Show next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
First, I want to thank Jeanette, my wife, who has been so supportive. The vice president knows well, it's impossible to do any of these jobs we do here, including the Senate, but now in this new role, without the support of our family and particularly of our spouses. And so thank you for being supportive every step of the way. I would not stand here before you today without that. I'm also thrilled and grateful that all four of my children are here. They're the most important legacy any of us will leave behind, the most important job I'll ever have. Is that of a father and a husband, and I'm honored that they are able to join us. I want to end by thanking Almighty God and my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. That is truly the singular purpose of our lives. It's the most important priority. It's the only thing that will matter when we take our last breath on this earth. But this is an extraordinary opportunity. It would not have been possible without God's blessing.
Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry here, and glad to welcome Hogan Gidley to the show. America's First Policy Institute Senior Advisor for Communications. Hogan, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the time.
So we just played that clip there from former Senator Marco Rubio, currently the Secretary of State. And looking at news of the day, Senator Murkowski has come out and said she is not going to support Pete Hegseth. Do you see any more problems for any of Trump's nominees getting across the line?
I don't so far. I mean, let's be honest here. What's happening is that Donald Trump won this election in a landslide with a mandate, winning all the swing states, the popular vote. The people want him to put his nominees in place. They want his cabinet so that those folks can shake things up. It doesn't mean that they're radical picks. It means they're people that want to return their agencies, respective, back to the missions they were set out to do in the first place. Pete Hegseth is a great example of that. Someone I know, someone I like. But let's be honest, the DOD has become a serious problem in so many ways. It's the same department, mind you, that allowed a spy balloon from China to traverse the entire width of our country. Stopping over our military installations, nuclear sites to gather information. This DOD under Joe Biden was the same department that allowed its leader, Lloyd Austin, to go AWOL for 5 days. No one knew where he was. Nuclear codes weren't taken care of. There was no chain of command that happened. And he even told his staff to not tell anyone he was going into surgery into a hospital. It's the same DOD that, you know, oversaw the horrible withdrawal in Afghanistan that led to the needless, senseless deaths of 13 Americans at Abbey Gate. So this department has had a history of some epic failures, and what you want is for them to be war ready, for them to be competent and prepared for the challenges at hand that face us today. And look, let's be honest, our military is still the most lethal, most incredible fighting force on the entire planet than there ever has been. But you also need leadership at the top that continues that mission as opposed to the woke radical mission of DEI and other issues.
Hogan, during Trump's first term, you heard the phrase promises made, promises kept. I see nothing in the first 3-4 days of Trump's second term that he hasn't already promised. All the executive orders that the left typically would be screaming about, he said, this is what we're going to do. He ran on it, and now he's doing it.
Well, he ran on it, and he won on it.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. And only in not Washington, D.C. would it be a novelty that someone makes a promise and then keeps it. But Donald Trump did so in his first term. He's doing so now. The difference, of course, is that his knowledge and wisdom, his discernment that he gained the first time around is on full display here with the rapidity at which he's moving to accomplish all the campaign promises right out of the gate. These executive orders were written. They were prepared to go. They're prepared to withstand judicial interference, lawsuits, et cetera. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But right now, Donald Trump is not just on a mission. He's successfully executing that mission to accomplish things for the American people who have been kicked in the teeth now for the last 4 years. They want results. They want them fast. Donald Trump's the man to do it.
Hogan Gidley with us. He's America First Policy Institute Senior Advisor for Communications. What do you expect to be happening on the budget? This could be a little bit of an internal fight, but it's one that I'm glad we're having because, you know, these are the kind of things that we elected Republicans to do in both chambers is kind of fight over the budget. What do you expect to happen here regarding Trump? Is he going to lead this thing? Is he going to kind of let the House do what it needs to do and step in when he needs to? What are you looking for here?
Well, I think he's been pretty obviously involved and engaged like he never has been before. He had the factions in the House caucuses with the Freedom Caucus and the Main Street Caucus, the moderates, et cetera, all down to Mar-a-Lago to meet with them. He's met with the Senate as well. But right now, the track is for one big, beautiful bill. And they want to do that through reconciliation. And I know your listeners are savvy, but just as a reminder, if you do it through reconciliation, you don't need a single Democrat vote. And the idea here is let's negotiate amongst ourselves. And while there may be pieces in the bill you don't like, it's better than negotiating with Chuck Schumer, where you're going to get a whole ton of things in a bill you don't like. So bringing those factions together is paramount. And if they keep the one track or the one bill option together, it allows the House to bring warring factions, people who want massive budget cuts, people who want to get rid of the debt limit, people who want salt tax and all those things to come to the table under the conversation of like a border piece, for example, a national security piece, for example. So if you put a lot of things in the bill, you may not like some of them, but you get a lot of what you want in that bill. And I think Republicans are going to do a good job under the Speaker's leadership, for example, running the plays that Donald Trump wants run.
Hogan, we were talking a little bit in the last segment about the amazing transparency of a Trump administration, really Donald Trump himself. We were looking at stats of Joe Biden's amount of time taking questions and doing press conferences over the 4 years. And in 2024, he was actually the lowest. It was somewhere a little over 2 hours total over the year that he spent in questions, taking questions from the press, which, of course, a lot of times were on note cards and things like that. And in Donald Trump's first couple days, he's already eclipsed that. It's just kind of refreshing to see a president who's willing to talk to the American people.
No question. But another word, it's not just the transparency, which I think Donald Trump ran him one on, but it's the accountability. How many times have we been exposed to somebody in the government that's working against Donald Trump or working to weaponize their particular agency against an American citizen for their political beliefs, and then nothing happens to them? We can talk about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's business dealings. We can talk about Hillary Clinton and her 30,000 emails. We can talk about Hillary, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, those people, for example. Venmo, all the folks who've been seen now to work against Donald Trump. It seems like there's never any accountability. One of the big moves I think Donald Trump did early on was he revoked the security clearance. He yanked those things like he'd start a lawnmower from those 51 intel agents who said that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. As you well know, only one of two things can be true. One, they really can't spot Russian disinformation, which is a real problem. Or two, they knew that the laptop was real and lied about it. Either way, it's not good. But Donald Trump not just made it transparent, but he also held them accountable. That's the secondary piece to this that I think Trump brings to the table.
Hogan, last question for you, because I know you got to run here. But what do we expect to see in the next couple weeks? You know, we knew there are going to be a lot of executive orders, and Trump is very good at drawing attention to what he's doing. What do you think that is coming up?
Look, I think with the Lake and Riley Act coming out of the House, we're going to see some movement there, maybe a signature in some form or fashion to try and you know, heal the pain, bring closure, but also prevent some horrific thing like that from happening again at the hands of an illegal alien, I think we're going to see some more border moves as well, some defense moves. Once these folks get installed, like Christine Ohm at the Department of Homeland Security, or like Pete Hegseth, if he survives as well, which it looks like he's going to, even though Murkowski bailed on him, it looks like he's going to survive. If that's the case, then we can get the DOD back to its mission, not to mention Rubio, you played at the top of this, at state, reconstituting our strength, our love and respect on the global stage. All these people need to be in place soon, and you're going to see that happen. And when it does, you're going to see the full force and weight of an American First agenda and an America First administration.
Hogan Gidley from the America First Policy Institute. Always appreciate talking to you here on the Annie Fry Show, and today is no exception. Thanks.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
All right.
It.
Thank you. So real quick, before we get to the end of this segment, I was looking over some of the news items. We're going to get to some CNN stuff here in a second, which was really fun. Really fun listening to Jim Acosta try to pretend like half of CNN isn't getting fired right
now.
We
were talking about the confirmations there, and breaking news is John Ratcliffe has been confirmed as the next CIA director.
Oh, yeah. They were just doing that vote. He's been a little bit less, there's less attention.
He's not one of the big,
on
like,
him.
And I don't think he was one of the controversial ones. I think he was there with like kind of Rubio was kind of, this guy's a sure thing. So
you said he's CIA director?
CIA director.
Well, we have a new CIA director in town. So welcome to the new America. Before we get to the next segment here, like I said, I want to play this from Eric Schmidt. Missouri, you've got some good senators. Here's Eric Schmidt talking about some of these Trump picks.
All right, just leaving the Senate floor, I was presiding. Senate Majority Leader Thune was making some remarks. It's very clear now that the Democrats are delaying these confirmation votes for no good reason. They're playing politics. Our national security is on the line. So we've got the director of the CIA. We've got the defense secretary. A lot of important nominations that we need to vote on. So we can do it the easy way with their cooperation or the hard way. And it looks like we're going to do it the hard way because one way or another, President Trump's going to get his picks.
I love it. I love mm-hmm. it. I mean, just like you just said, they are confirming people regardless of yeah. playing these kind of these parlamentary games that they do. Motion to do this, and then it slows things down yeah. and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was one of the things that happened to Ratcliffe. He was supposed to be confirmed, I think, yesterday or the day before. And Chris Murphy of Connecticut, like, made a motion and delayed it, and then they voted for him. It's just like Senator Schmidt was saying there. They're playing games, and I like that. I've seen this from Senator Schmidt. I've seen it from Leader Thune. Republicans aren't just going to be like, oh, and squishy on this. They're going to play hardball now, and that's what we have been begging for them to do for a long time. So it's really refreshing.
How many times over the years have we said, I mean, even over the years on the show, let alone in life, Republicans, grow a spine.
Fight them.
Have a backbone. It looks like they are concerning these picks, which is a big deal. The only defection that we've seen so far at all happened, a half an hour ago?
Yeah.
From Lisa Murkowski saying she's not going to vote for Pete Hegseth. It's still, if anybody else weren't, they probably would have come out by now, which indicates yeah. that Pete Hegseth would get confirmed, because they did kind of a mock
yeah,
vote.
They're actually doing a test vote right now.
Yeah, that was the plan. So if she's coming out and saying no, but nobody else is, that means he will likely pass, but we'll keep you updated on that. And when we come back from this break, I think we're going to try to get to that Wiggins America material that Ethan was so nice to make, and then we just kind of bantered around and never got there. It's about popular New Year's resolutions and how long they last.
Yeah, I believe so.
It's like stuff you've probably heard. You hear it every year, but I want to hear what this year's are. Probably health related, but we'll see from Ethan. Coming up next here on the Annie Fry Show. This song is super short. It's only a minute 55, I
think.
Yeah,
super short. I got a minute 38 left.
It's one of the most popular songs to ever be under 2 minutes.
Wait, really?
As far as I understand it, yeah. Yeah, because this was a number one in the late 90s.
It's that old?
Yeah.
Late 90s.
Yeah, this is Blur.
Yeah, I know that.
Okay.
Because I'm the one that pulled it and put it
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. That is that. But you know the song, right?
Yeah, I know the song. I just didn't know
it was
from
the 90s. You were born in 2000?
2000. I'm a 2000 baby.
Gosh, it's amazing to hear so many songs and go, wow, that's older than you.
Yeah. That's a thing that happens.
Okay, I was having a discussion with somebody today.
Okay.
You're a Gen X? No, you're Z.
I don't know what I am. We've had this conversation.
Maybe Z.
I forget what I am.
Okay, if you walk into a 50s diner, are you like, oh, this is cool? Or are you like, oh, this is old?
50s diners, like the checkered floors. Yes. And like, no, I would think that's cool.
Okay. Because I was having this discussion with a guy who's actually on my weekend show a lot, Old Roy. And he's like, no,
Ryan, you forget that I know Old Roy probably better than just about anyone here besides
because
you.
Because you produce the show. Yes. And you listen to it.
Yes.
He was saying, well, because I was born close to the 50s, I had a nostalgia for that. And therefore, when I walk into a place like that, I have emotion about it. But the next generation that would come would not. Because they don't have any affiliation with the 50s. And I'm like, well, I get that you wouldn't have an emotional tie to it, but you would still think it has, it's cool. It looks cool, right?
Yes. There isn't necessarily an emotional tie to that, but there definitely is a sense of, because I think more so than anything today, one, it's the style, because the style is no longer like that with modern times.
It's a theme.
But also, the art behind it, like, that's just not put into restaurants in today's day and age.
It's not put into anything in today's day and age.
Completely agree.
That's what makes old cars cool, because the styling and stuff, like, now modern vehicles are designed in wind tunnels, and they all kind of look the same way, because they have the same shape and all that other stuff, because they have to achieve the certain mileage and all that other stuff. But you look back in the you know, 60s, 70s to a lesser extent, but even older, 50s, 40s, 30s, it was a style. It was an art piece. The designer was putting their heart and soul into that car. And so you got things like gigantic tail fins on Cadillacs and stuff like that.
Was Old Roy speaking just about diners, or just like that time period things in general?
It was a larger point being made that if you were born near a time period, even if you weren't in it, you would have some sort of affiliation with it because you had been around it. Like, you would be able to identify with something that was 80s or 90s because it was not that long ago. Sure. But you really don't interact with people who would have been around in the 50s or had, like, because I was growing up. That's not funny. I was growing up watching things like Happy Days. So Happy Days was on in reruns even when I was a kid, and it was about the 50s. I wasn't around the 50s. But I was familiar with the culture just from being, like, close to it.
Yeah, and a great example of this would be, you know, it was a few months ago now probably that we had the segment, the Wiggins America segment, where you had all the remixes of all of the old
sitcoms.
Yeah, sitcom theme songs. And, well, you probably played 5 or 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I knew maybe one of them that I can think of. I had never heard of some
Joke
of those
was lost
shows.
On you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, now I'm still impressed with the work that you did to, like, put them together, but there wasn't that, oh man, this show, yeah, I remember this show. Like, basically, that's kind of what those shows for, like, you guys are probably now what, like, Seinfeld or Friends is for me.
Oh, that makes me feel
old. Yeah, that makes sense. That hurts. That makes sense.
Like, Seinfeld ended before I was born.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that probably does match up.
The Friends phenomenon, I don't get. Because there are still people, even your age, who've really discovered Friends in syndication and just love it. There's a game show now, I think, on Netflix that's about Friends. Like, it's trivia. It's people getting up, you know, behind the little booth, ringing in. And it's all about the show Friends. I don't get it.
Yeah, do you just not like the show?
Well, I didn't hate the show.
Or you just don't understand why it's as popular as it is.
But I don't get why, like, it... Shows have their run, and then if they're amazing, Seinfeld was so unique at the time, especially, that I get why it was a cultural phenomenon that stayed around. Friends, obviously, was a very successful show. It was around actually longer than I, at the end of it, more years than Seinfeld. But I just don't get why that would now translate to a new generation. I get it.
I honestly don't know either. Actually, my sister would be a good one to ask because I really like Friends. I think it's funny. It's a good show. But I've watched it all the way through a couple of times. But, like, my sister is a huge Friends fan. Like, you know, like, kind of like the level that some people are Taylor Swift fans, like that level of Friends fan, like, knows the trivia, all those kinds of things. And yes, you're right. That has stuck on.
And I wish I could give you an answer as to why that is specifically with that show, but I have no good reasoning for it.
Well, before we get too far down that rabbit hole, let's get to the New Year's resolution. We keep delaying it. Yeah, no, you got to do it.
You know,
we said we were going to do it.
I thought that I was going to be two for two and just, no, just do the pushing stall. It off.
And we could. Don't get me wrong. We could do that.
Yeah, I'm not even going to waste time with the sounder. Let's get right to
it. Now, Ryan is just saying, no, you have to do it. You have to go.
Do the thing.
He's filibustering.
Okay. You know the thing.
Yeah. The thing, yeah. You want to talk about Joe Biden?
No. Do it. Do what
okay,
you brought.
So, as you guys previewed earlier, New Year's resolutions. Now, it's kind of funny. You know, it was just a couple of weeks ago that there was a, I don't know if it was a specific day or if it was the week as a whole, that was, it was either Quitter's Day or Quitter's Week. I forget what it is. But that was the second week. That occurred during the second week of January.
Yeah, yeah.
Which really goes to show you that New Year's resolutions are just stupid because no one actually, like, does anything with them or really has any intent with sticking with them because the large majority of people give up on them by the second week of the year.
I'm not going to ask you if you do a New Year's resolution. We may have already discussed this at some point.
I think we did.
And I may have been gone when we did because I don't remember. But it's something you always talk about at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
But I will ask you this. Do you know anyone who does a New Year's resolution?
And like, you mean like actually
anybody.
Sticks it out?
No, anybody who even tries it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of anybody in my life that I know has done it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, and they, you know, it's goals. Sometimes it's like, I want to achieve this by the end of the year, stuff like that. The ones, like I said, the ones that have more success with it that I know are the ones that make more specific goals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not, I want to lose a little weight. I want to get into better shape. That's kind of like a thought process, and it doesn't really ever translate into anything. But the ones that are like, hey, I want to weigh this much by this date, those are the people that have more success because they have a clear defined goal and a place to go.
They're also just, and that's a great point, but they're kind of just boring. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, what I'm going to say is opposite of what you just said, and what I'm going to tell you is what, right now, the six most common New Year's resolutions are.
They're boring.
And they are the exact opposite of what Brad just said, and it's probably a reason why they don't get, they don't gain any traction or people don't stick with them. Here they are.
Okay.
We're going to start from number one, and we're going to go all the way down. Number one, save more money. 21% of people say that's
like you said, that's a loose goal.
Yeah.
It's loose, yeah.
You could have an extra dollar by the end of the year and be like, well,
yeah,
did it.
This is how silly these resolutions are. The next three, all health-related. Number two, eat healthier. That's 19%.
Yeah,
number three,
again, it's just like you said. Yeah.
Number three, exercise more. And number four, lose weight. Those are all basically the same thing.
They are kind of the same thing.
Number five, spend more time with family and friends. And number six, this is the most specific one out of all of them, quit smoking.
Yeah, you can judge that. You can judge whether you did that or not. Quit smoking. You know what's crazy is how much marijuana has become part of our national culture, instantly.
How often? I mean, I remember growing up, and you know, you're with mom, you're going to the store, and there's someone standing outside the store or smoking. Mm-hmm. I mean, like just even in, I'm 24 now. In 15 years, like how much that has completely changed. I mean, I feel like I'm honestly surprised that it's that high of a number. 9% of people say that that's their New Year's resolution. That seems pretty high to me because,
well,
I feel like I never see people smoking anymore.
I say that because I bet a lot of those people are saying that not about tobacco. They're saying it about marijuana.
You think so?
I'm sure there are some. I don't know what the percentage would be. But I tell you what, it's possible that your entire life, you've been driving down the road, you're headed down 64, going into work, whatever, and you've been behind somebody who's drunk.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really know it unless they're swerving and, you know, you can see it in their driving. Man, I can tell you about at least once a day, I'm behind somebody who is definitely driving high because I can smell it. And
yeah.
For you to be smoking so much in your car that you're driving 70 miles an hour down an interstate and I can smell you.
That's bad.
That is a lot of smoke coming out of your car. I just can't believe how quickly we've gotten to that place and how also like the pendulum seems to be swinging back the other way in some ways, because where they've legalized drugs, not just marijuana, but like lots and lots of drugs in Portland, for instance, the furthest left people, I'm talking about people running like LGBTQ bookstores in Portland, are like, I think we went too far on drugs.
This is not great. Like,
yeah. So there's this big kind of swing back. I just don't know where this ends. Like, do we have national legal marijuana? Because we don't yet. It's state by state still. Or does this pendulum swing back in the other direction? I really don't know.
Kind of hope we don't get that far.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just saying this because I'm so tired of smelling it. No matter where I go, either me or my kids are going, oh,
is there a skunk around?
I'm just done with it. All right, 2 o'clock hour coming up.